Childhood origins of self-criticism and inadequacy. Our tendency to criticize ourselves and feel inadequate often starts in childhood. When we have personal issues, it's common to trace them back to our upbringing and sometimes even blame our parents. This idea is a classic notion in psychology, though it's overly simplistic. Psychology offers more nuanced insights into our problems than just blaming our upbringing. However, when it comes to dealing with feelings of self-criticism and inadequacy, there is some truth to this notion. Research in psychology indicates that adults tend to be more critical of themselves if their parents were highly critical of them as children. This makes sense when you think about it. When we're growing up, we rely on our parents to help us navigate life's challenges, understand the world, and feel safe and loved. Naturally, we trust their opinions and seek their approval. Combine this natural trust with an overly critical parent, and it can be harmful. Imagine being a child and having your parents criticize every little thing you do, from how you eat dinner to how you dress for school. On top of that, imagine they also say hurtful things about you, like calling you stupid for making a mistake, such as crossing the street without checking for traffic. Internalize parental criticism. Over time, frequent small criticisms and put-downs can build up into a broader judgment of oneself. I'm not okay as I am. I need to be perfect to deserve love. As a child, this can make your parents' criticisms hurt deeply. To avoid their disapproval, you might start anticipating their criticism and criticizing yourself first. This way, you can adjust your behavior to avoid their disappointment. Eventually, you start believing these critical voices as your thoughts. For example, if you accidentally drop a glass of water, you might immediately call yourself names and blame your clumsiness. This leads to a habit of self-criticism and feeling inadequate, which can persist into adulthood. Societal influence on self-criticism and inadequacy. Societal pressures often push us to criticize ourselves and feel inadequate. However, it's not just our parents who can shape these feelings. They can come from siblings, uncles, coaches, teachers, or anyone whose critical words impacted us as children. Moreover, it's not limited to individuals. Broader societies also play a role in shaping how we see ourselves. In Western societies, many of us live in competitive cultures that value individual achievement. We grow up believing that feeling good about ourselves means standing out from others. This usually translates to being better than average, ideally the best. However, since not everyone can be better than average simultaneously, we end up seeing others as rivals. We become fixated on surpassing them in the game of life. To gauge our success, we constantly compare our accomplishments with theirs. Simultaneously, we closely monitor how we measure up to societal standards like wealth and physical appearance. Our self-esteem becomes intertwined with our performance relative to others and these societal benchmarks. Comparison leads to dissatisfaction. Trying to be perfect or better than everyone else is impossible. Whether we're looking at a wealthy person in a fancy car or a stunning model on a magazine cover, there's always someone more successful, attractive, or talented than us. No matter how good we are at something, we can always improve and we'll always mess up. We're human, after all, and there's always room to get better. As long as we measure our self-worth by comparing ourselves to others and society's standards, we'll never be satisfied. There will always be a gap between where we are and where we think we should be. Focusing on that gap only leads us to criticize ourselves and what we do. Limitations of self-criticism. Self-criticism can provide some motivation, but it also comes with serious drawbacks. If you believe in improving yourself, you might be skeptical. You could argue that childhood experiences and social pressures keep us stuck in self-criticism and feeling inadequate. Yet, you might think this is beneficial. Doesn't it stop us from being complacent? Doesn't it push us to keep getting better? Well, it's a bit of both. Negative self-talk can sometimes push us to do better, but it mostly hurts. When we criticize ourselves harshly, it often includes insults and judgments about our worth. For example, if you're hard on yourself and you're late to a meeting, you might think, "I'm such a failure. I can't get anything right." That kind of message is painful to hear, so we try to avoid it. Maybe next time, you'll set an alarm on your phone to be on time. Self-criticism can push us to improve because we want to avoid that pain. But relying on fear to motivate ourselves has its problems. Anxiety and performance. Anxiety can hinder our success. Imagine you're an actor getting ready to go on stage. If you're too worried about being harshly judged, whether by the audience or yourself, you won't focus properly on your acting. This stage fright makes you tense and unfocused. Sometimes, anxiety leads people to intentionally perform poorly. This way, they can dismiss criticism by saying their bad performance doesn't reflect their true abilities. Psychologists call this self-handicapping. Another common response to anxiety is procrastination. To avoid self-criticism, people put off tasks. The longer they delay, the longer they avoid facing their judgment. Harmful effects of self-criticism. Imagine walking down an icy street with your best friend when she suddenly slips and falls. You wouldn't just stand there and say, "Wow, you're so clumsy. You can't even walk properly." That would be unkind and unhelpful. But when it comes to our own mistakes and struggles, many of us are quick to criticize ourselves harshly. Our self-criticism can be harmful in the long run. If we imagine talking to others the way we talk to ourselves, it becomes clear how hurtful it can be. Would we repeatedly tell a child or a friend that they're useless or stupid because they made a mistake? No, because that would be a form of abuse. Negative effects of self-criticism. Imagine how a child would feel if they were constantly told they were useless, good for nothing, or couldn't do anything right. These kinds of comments would crush their spirit over time. They would start feeling less valuable, always scared of making mistakes or not meeting high standards. This affects us adults too. It leads to depression, anxiety, insecurity, and dissatisfaction with life. Studies show self-criticism can cause these issues and also make us doubt our abilities to achieve things. The more we believe in ourselves, the more likely we are to succeed. On top of that, self-criticism makes us distracted, tense, and likely to procrastinate or hold ourselves back. When we put all this together, it's clear, criticizing ourselves doesn't just harm our mental health but also stops us from doing our best. In short, self-criticism doesn't work, even for those who want to improve. It's a flawed strategy we should avoid. Choose self-compassion over self-criticism. Self-compassion is a kinder, healthier way to handle tough situations than self-criticism. When someone falls, like your friend slipping on ice, your immediate reaction is usually concern. Are you okay? You'd comfort them and help them up. Showing this compassion for yourself means treating your own mistakes and hardships with the same care. It's about being understanding and supportive towards yourself, just like you would be for a friend. Compassion for ourselves starts with recognizing our suffering. This can be challenging, especially in Western cultures where we're often taught to endure pain without showing it. We're told to ignore our feelings and carry on, but this isn't always helpful. To change this, we need to pause and check in with ourselves. How are we feeling right now? Are we upset about something difficult? Are we disappointed or frustrated with ourselves for not meeting our expectations? Whatever it is, we need to acknowledge these feelings and be aware of them. Just like how we would show concern for a friend who's hurt, by asking if they're okay, we can apply the same kindness to ourselves. It's about being mindful of our suffering and not brushing it aside. This practice of self-compassion helps us better handle our emotions and support ourselves through difficult times. Support loved ones in times of suffering. Practicing kindness towards ourselves involves rejecting the idea that we should be tough on ourselves and our suffering. To understand how we can be kind to ourselves, let's first look at how we support others. When someone we care about is going through a tough time, we usually start by offering words of comfort like, "I'm sorry you're going through this." Alongside these words, we often offer gestures like a hug, a gentle touch, or simply placing a hand on their shoulder. Now you might be thinking, am I going to be told to hug myself or comfort myself with kind words? Yes, you are, and if that sounds strange, there's a good reason for it. Self-compassion in Western culture. Growing up in the West, we're taught to endure our pain silently, especially if we're partly responsible for it. Western culture emphasizes personal responsibility and often lacks sympathy for our suffering. If we fail or make mistakes, we tend to blame ourselves without mercy. Because of these beliefs, the idea of self-hugging might sound strange. But our bodies respond positively to physical touch, even from ourselves. Scientifically, hugging triggers the release of oxytocin, a hormone that brings feelings of calmness and safety. So, next time you're feeling anxious or sad, why not try hugging yourself? Alternatively, you can comfort yourself with gentle words. Saying something like, "It's okay, things are tough right now," can make a difference. If these suggestions make you uncomfortable, it might be worth reflecting on your attitude towards yourself. Create psychological space through self-compassion. Practicing self-compassion means creating distance from your suffering. If comforting yourself feels awkward, that's normal. When you give yourself a hug or other self-comfort, you're taking on two roles usually done by different people. You become both the caregiver and the one receiving care simultaneously. Normally, these roles are split between two people. In this way, you're dividing yourself into two parts. One part is experiencing suffering and receiving care, while the other part feels compassion and provides comfort. This compassionate part of you steps outside of your pain. It empathizes with your suffering but remains separate from it. By comforting yourself, you're not fully consumed by your pain anymore. You're creating space between yourself and your suffering. This act sends a powerful message: yes, I'm suffering, but I'm also capable of showing compassion to myself. I'm both the one needing comfort and the one giving it. Mindfulness helps manage negative emotions. Mindfulness can also help us create a healthy space between ourselves and our suffering. When you're mindful of a negative emotion, you're not letting it overwhelm you. It's like pausing in front of it, stepping back, and acknowledging, "This is what I'm feeling right now. It's temporary, not my whole reality." This might sound a bit abstract, but it's very practical. If a negative emotion consumes you entirely, it's hard to do anything about it. You lose the mental space to see things objectively. For instance, if stress is making you see everything negatively, it feels like stress is your whole reality, not just a reaction to what's happening. Practicing mindfulness helps you regain perspective and think clearly about your situation. You won't be swept away by thoughts like, "Everything is so stressful." This clarity puts you in a better position to tackle the problems causing your stress. Connect with others. Knowing that others share our struggles is important for self-compassion. Imagine if you thought you were the only person in the world afraid of public speaking. Feeling alone with this fear can make you harsh on yourself, thinking, "Everyone else is fine with public speaking. What's wrong with me?" Now, imagine someone telling you, "Actually, almost everyone fears public speaking. It's one of the most common phobias." Realizing this would likely bring a huge sense of relief. It shows that your fear is a normal part of being human, shared by many others. Shared humanity and self-compassion. When we're struggling with something, it's easy to become so focused on our suffering that it feels like we're the only ones going through it. This makes us feel lonely and can make our pain worse. But remembering that many others have faced similar challenges can comfort us. Recognizing our shared humanity also helps us fight perfectionism. It reminds us that it's normal to make mistakes, have flaws, and experience setbacks. We don't need to be so hard on ourselves because these things are part of being human. Self-compassion isn't just about being soft on ourselves, it's a practical way to relate to our humanity. It encourages us to acknowledge our imperfections without beating ourselves up over them. It's a reasonable approach to being kind to ourselves. Turn self-criticism into self-compassion. Instead of seeing self-criticism as a roadblock, it can be a starting point for self-compassion. But shifting from self-criticism to self-compassion isn't easy. If you're used to criticizing yourself, you can't just switch it off. When you begin practicing self-compassion, you might catch yourself being self-critical and then feel bad for doing that too. You might think, "Oh no, I'm being critical again." Stop it. Be kind to yourself. But this just makes things worse. You can't stop criticizing yourself for criticizing yourself by criticizing yourself more. So how do you break free from this cycle? The trick is to practice self-compassion alongside your self-criticism, not fight against it. If you often criticize yourself, you might not notice it anymore. So, when you find a huge pile of dirty dishes in the sink during a coffee break, your first step is to stop and listen to how you talk to yourself. Are you being too critical? Instead of scolding yourself, try to understand the negative feelings and needs behind your words. Maybe you're annoyed because you need a tidy space to work in. Next, ask yourself what you can do to meet that need. Maybe take a break to clean up or ask for help from a roommate. Now, talk to yourself with compassion. Acknowledge your frustration and say something supportive. This way, you're not just criticizing, you're addressing the problem positively. Recognize that self-compassion doesn't make you self-indulgent or complacent about your issues. Instead, it encourages you to be supportive of yourself and ready to face your challenges directly, rather than just getting frustrated with yourself. In other words, self-compassion is a more caring and effective way of treating yourself. Key points. 1. Self-criticism often begins in childhood, shaped by overly critical parents or authority figures. 2. We internalize criticism and start to believe we must be perfect to deserve love. 3. Societal pressures and constant comparisons make us feel inadequate and dissatisfied. 4. Self-criticism can motivate, but it usually harms our mental health and performance. 5. Practicing self-compassion helps us handle mistakes with kindness and care. 6. Mindfulness creates space between us and negative emotions, helping us think clearly. 7. Recognizing our shared humanity reminds us that mistakes and flaws are normal.